Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from our Hideaway studio in East County. Today, we've got some important national, state, and local news in the public interest. Charging poor people more money than they can afford for bail is unconstitutional, the U.S. Justice Department is arguing. We'll have details on today's show. And then on Green Scene, hear how the National Park Service is celebrating its centennial, including free admission to see these national treasures across America on several dates from now till the end of the year. Next up, learn about Proposition 61, a ballot measure that aims to help California negotiate for lower prescription drug prices in the wake of several prescription drug price scandals. Here in East County, we'll tell you about some unsung heroes who are helping border fire victims clear away debris and how they even went the extra mile to help the family of a soldier killed in Iraq. We'll tell you why Supervisor Jacob and residents of Jamul staged a protest over traffic safety concerns as the Jamul Indian Village prepares for the opening of its Hollywood casino. Then we'll have an announcement for Lemon Grove residents about a meeting this Saturday on the city's plans for its downtown village, as well as details about a La Mesa City Council candidate forum coming up soon. On Crime Beat, stay tuned to hear about an escaped prisoner with ties to the College Grove and Chula Vista areas. Plus, hear about a man arrested for photographing a 10-year-old girl in an East County Walmart restroom. Our newsmaker interviews today are with Mark Humphreys and Mike Erhammer from the Helix Water District. They'll be clearing up controversies over high mercury levels found in some fish in local reservoirs, according to a new state report, and giving you tips on what fish are safe to eat. They'll also have details about the water rate hike, as well as some good news to share about new attractions coming to Lake Jennings, plus some classes for those of you who want to learn about water-wise landscaping. On the second half of our show today, Rebecca Williamson and Jonathan Getz will be hosting Destination East County, telling you about some special events this weekend, from a stargazing party to a concert to help local veterans, and the grand opening of a new wine tasting room in La Mesa. Plus, they'll have a preview of upcoming events such as Corvette Cruise Night, Julian's Apple Days, music festivals, and the biggest Oktoberfest west of the Mississippi in La Mesa. We'll also tell you how to get a free GPS device to prevent Alzheimer's patients from getting lost. And then on sports, Liz Alper will tell you about a San Diego State golf champion who will soon be PGA bound. Plus, learn how windows may soon be generating solar electricity. We'll have all these stories and more on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
Keeping poor defendants in jail because they can't afford bail is unconstitutional and violates the 14th Amendment right to equal protection. The U.S. Justice Department argued in a brief filed in federal court on Thursday. Jailing people for an extended time period when they pose no serious flight risk or danger to others can jeopardize their safety. An investigation by the Huffington Post documented over 800 jail deaths over the past year, from July 2015 to July 2016. Many of those were people who were arrested for minor offenses and who were unable to afford their bail. The defendant in the case that Justice Department weighed in on is Maurice Walker, who was arrested in Calhoun, Georgia, for being intoxicated while walking. The court was closed over a holiday weekend, and he could not afford $160 for bail. So he stayed in jail for 6 nights until civil rights groups filed a class action lawsuit on his behalf. A federal judge ruled on Walker's favor, finding that, quote, any bail or bond scheme that mandates payment of prefix amounts for different offenses to obtain pretrial release without any consideration of indigence or other factors violates the Equal Protection Clause, unquote. The city of Calhoun has appealed that ruling. The ruling is also opposed by the American Bail Coalition, representing the bail bond companies that profit off the bail system. The National Association of Criminal Justice Lawyers supports the Justice Department's action, as do civil rights groups. The case could ultimately establish an important procedure to protect the rights of poor people in the court system and assure that wealthy people who are arrested for the same crimes are not treated preferentially based on their ability to pay to get out of jail. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jacob Myers.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Jacob Myers with a Green Scene Report. The National Park Service is celebrating its 100th birthday this year and wants everyone to join the party. So, they are giving away free entrance to all national parks on August 25th through 28th for the National Park Service's birthday. There will also be free admission again to all national parks on September 24th for National Public Lands Day and on Veterans Day, November 11th. There are more than 400 national parks available nationwide. The fee-free days provide a great opportunity to visit a new place or an old favorite, especially one of the 124 national parks that normally charge an entrance fee. The others are free all of the time. The National Park Service was founded during President Theodore Roosevelt's administration a century ago to assure protection of our nation's most cherished places for future generations to enjoy. Places such as the Grand Canyon, Yellowstone, Mount Rushmore, Volcanoes National Park in Hawaii, and Yosemite National Park here in California. But recently, national parks have been threatened by some conservatives in Congress who have cut funding and even proposed to sell off some national parks, forests, and monuments to private corporations. The Park Service is offering fee-free day throughout its centennial year to make parks accessible to more people. In addition, any fourth grade student can get a free annual pass through the Every Kid in a Park program. Active duty military and citizens with a permanent disability can also get a free pass. You can check out the National Park Service webpage at nps.gov to start discovering our national parks and plan your next visit to enjoy our country's historical and natural attractions.
This is Jonathan Goetz with the Health Report. Proposition 61, the California Drug Price Relief Act, on the November ballot aims to limit price gouging on drug prices by pharmaceutical companies. Some drug prices have skyrocketed for no valid reason, only corporate greed. For instance, the cost of an EpiPen, which delivers life-saving medication for people suffering severe allergic reactions, has recently gone up 800%. Prop 61 would let state agencies in California negotiate for discount pricing on prescription drugs. The state could pay no more than the U.S. Veterans Affairs Department, which pays 40% less than Medicare for the same prescription medications. The initiative would not apply to costs paid by individuals, only to state agencies. It would benefit taxpayers by lowering drug prices the state pays for Californians on Medi-Cal, public employees such as teachers and firefighters, and state prison inmates. Medi-Cal patients in HMO-managed healthcare plans, however, would not be included, since companies such as Kaiser already negotiate with pharmaceutical companies for lower-priced drugs. This initiative would give state agencies the same right that those insurance companies already have to help lower prescription drug costs. The bill is supported by consumer and medical groups such as the California Nurses Association. It is opposed by the pharmaceutical industry, which has been funding groups claiming to be independent that are running deceptive ads making false or exaggerated claims in an effort to scare consumers into voting no. Those ads claim the initiative could lead to higher prices or medications no longer available in California. But all major developed nations except the U.S. already have limits on how much these companies can charge for prescription drugs. Those countries haven't seen the availability of drugs diminish, but have seen costs go down dramatically.
Supervisor Diane Jacob joined with Hamul residents last week at a press conference to voice concerns over the Hollywood Casino, slated to open soon on the Hamul Indian Village Reservation. Jacob said the casino will, quote, turn Highway 94 into even more of a death trap. She noted that 23 deaths, hundreds of injuries, and over 1,100 collisions have occurred on the two-lane highway since 2005. She also voiced concern over keeping the highway unobstructed for evacuation in case of a major wildfire. Jacob called on the state to rescind an interim alcohol permit issued to the casino. She also asked the state to hold a public hearing and to be sure that all critical road improvements are completed before allowing the casino to open in order to protect public safety. In at least two other casino openings locally, Verona and Sequan, alcohol permits were not issued until after the casinos had been operational for a year or more to first assess traffic impacts. We've asked the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board why it hasn't followed a similar protocol here, but the agency did not respond. While highway improvements in front of the casino have been made, other promised roadway mitigations have not yet begun, Hamul Action Committee stated in an email to community members and media. Parents are particularly upset about a lack of planned improvements near Steel Canyon High School, where multiple serious accidents have already occurred before the casino came along. Glenn Ravel, chairman of the Hamul Action Committee, said the casino is larger than the largest Super Walmart, adding 9,000 more vehicles a day from anticipated casino traffic will make the road even more dangerous, he contends. Steel Canyon High School's principal, Don Hohemer, voiced concerns over safety of student drivers, noting the school has activities from early morning through late evening hours. He, too, wants to see mitigation projects completed. Pastor Gary Musser from the Hamul Community Church noted that bumper stickers reading, "Pray for me, I drive Highway 94," have been around for years. Behind the grim accident statistics are people, he said, adding that he has officiated over far too many funerals for people who lost loved ones, as well as visiting injured motorists at hospitals. In an editorial published in the San Diego Union-Tribune, Supervisor Jacob accused the casino of asking folks to gamble with their lives. But the Hamul Indian Village has issued a statement which reads, "The Hamul Indian Village is wholeheartedly devoted to community safety. As such, we have committed approximately $20 million toward roadway improvements identified by the California Department of Transportation, Caltrans, and $3.7 million toward roadway improvements identified in our Memorandum of Understanding with the County of San Diego." The tribe adds that it has implemented immediate mitigation efforts, including a traffic signal on Highway 94 in front of the project to benefit the community and casino guests, also coordinating with local law enforcement for special event traffic measures. This and other commitments to fire and life safety affirm our strong dedication to being a good neighbor and ensuring the best for our community, the tribe's statement concludes. No official grand opening date has been publicly announced, but signs posted on Highway 94 alert motorists to be aware of traffic delays this week. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Kim Cooney.
This is Miriam Raftery with a heartwarming story from County News Service about some unsung heroes who are bringing recovery relief to local wildfire survivors. After the border fire swept through rural East County in June, it left burned-out ashen remains of 6 homes and 12 outbuildings. To help survivors clear debris, the County Office of Emergency Services turned to some Veterans of Disaster Cleanup, the California Southern Baptist Disaster Relief Organization. The California-based nonprofit responds to disasters all over the U.S. and the world if requested. The team is part of the National Voluntary Organizations Active in Disaster, which has a San Diego branch and coordinates with the county here during emergencies such as fires. They assisted after the 2007 firestorms and the 2014 Cocos fire, clearing metal frames and roofs, nails, charred wood, and mountains of ash from lots. The organization was recently recognized for its volunteer work by the County Board of Supervisors at its August 2nd meeting. Supervisor Diane Jacob presented the group with a proclamation saying the volunteers come quietly with no media and just help because they care. After the recent border fire, the county damage assessment teams reported the need for debris removal. Bennett Cummings, a senior emergency services coordinator with the county, reached out to the California Southern Baptist Disaster Relief and next contacted property owners to set up a meeting. Cummings says Southern Baptist will not only do debris removal, but they talk to the residents and can set up screens to sift through ash and check for mementos. In one particularly emotional instance, the group did the painstaking work for 60-year-old Potrero resident Bill Cronkright, who lost his main house and outbuildings in the border fire. Cronkright's son, Army Sergeant Brood Cronkright, was killed in the Iraq War, and his medals were in a cedar chest that burned in the house. The cleanup crew sifted ashes for 2 days before they finally found pieces of the medals. 72-year-old Escondido resident Jerry Shirley, who worked on that team, says it was important to them because we recovered a bit of their son. Volunteers then went a step farther. They contacted the military, and they were able to replace the medals, giving Cronkright a new Bronze Star, a Purple Heart, and a flag that had flown over the Marine Corps Air Station at Miramar to honor his son. Cronkright says, "Needless to say, it was very emotional for me. We were trying to get them replaced, but I wasn't having a bit of luck." He says he will forever be indebted to the relief workers, adding, "They have my heart." Relief team leader Tony Navarez from Rancho Penasquito says he is happy to help people in need. "Someone who just went through a disaster, it's overwhelming for them," he notes. The relief organization has specialty equipment to help, too, such as small bulldozers and chainsaws. Their team, many of whom live here in San Diego, received special training to use the equipment for debris removal and also learn about emotional first aid, which means listening to people tell their story of trauma. And if the ministry isn't enough, they may refer to others with more training. Multiple county departments get involved with various aspects of debris cleanup and recovery efforts. Homeowners can pay people to clear the debris, but some may be low income or not insured. And that's where groups like the Southern Baptist Disaster Relief Team can make such a difference. Cronkright concludes, "I was in a really hard place, and I didn't know what to do. They cleaned it all up, and they were very organized. I don't believe in my whole life I ever met a finer bunch of gentlemen, and it really rejuvenated my faith in human nature."
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news across our border region.
The City of Lemon Grove wants residents' input on proposed expansions of the Lemon Grove Downtown Village Specific Plan. A community workshop will be held on Saturday, August 27, at the Lemon Grove Community Center from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. The City's website says Lemon Grove wants to hear your thoughts on how to make downtown Lemon Grove an exciting place to live, work, and play. Participants will have an opportunity to share their ideas for the future of downtown and to discuss topics related to land use, urban design and art, economic and business development and mobility. Light snacks and refreshments will be provided. Child care and Spanish translation services will also be available. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jacob Myers.
The Mesa First United Methodist Church will be hosting a public forum for the Mesa City Council candidates in important ballot initiatives. The forum will be held on September 28th with the candidates meet and greet at 6:30 in the forum beginning at 7 p.m. This November, three candidates are vying for 2 seats on the La Mesa City Council, incumbents Christine Alicio and Ruth Sterling, plus challenger Colin Parent, an attorney and environmental advocate. La Mesa voters will also be asked to weigh in on whether or not to legalize medical marijuana clinics in the city limits, as well as voting on a school bond measure. A regional transportation initiative and the largest number of statewide ballot initiatives ever. La Mesa United Methodist Church is La Mesa's oldest church, now more than a century old, and has been a fixture at providing forums for discussions of important issues impacting La Mesa. The church is located at 4690 Palm Avenue, near the corner of Palm Avenue and La Mesa Boulevard. Reporting for the East County Magazine on KNSJ Radio, this is Rebecca Williamson.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Jacob Myers with a Crime Beat Report. The sheriff has issued an alert asking for public help to find an inmate who escaped from a prison in Otay Mesa over the weekend. Be on the lookout for a 24-year-old Demetrius B. Robertson, who was discovered missing Sunday from Facility 8 next to the George Bailey Detention Facility. Both prisons were placed on lockdown while deputies searched in vain for the missing inmate by ground and air Sunday night, with help from the U.S. Border Patrol agents. According to authorities, only inmates classified as low-medium security are housed at Facility 8. 10 News reports that Robertson's footsteps were tracked to the Olympic Training Center in Chula Vista. He may have been picked up in a nearby park. A checkpoint was set up to search vehicles being driven out of the area, and the San Diego County Fugitive Task Force searched areas that Robertson had been known to frequent, including Coyas View, Chula Vista, and College Grove. Robertson was arrested in May on a parole violation. He is an African American with black hair and brown eyes, standing 5 feet 9 inches tall and weighing about 195 pounds. He was last seen wearing a black sweatshirt and a baseball cap. If you have seen this escaped prisoner, do not approach him. Call 911. You can also provide tips anonymously by calling Crime Stoppers at 888-580-8477, and you could be eligible for a reward up to $1,000.
This is Kim Cooney with a Crime Beat report. A man with a prior conviction for lewd conduct has been arrested for allegedly photographing a 10-year-old girl in the women's restroom at a Walmart store on Camino Cañada in El Cajon, just off of Interstate 8 on August 17th. The suspect took off before deputies arrived. The girl told deputies that the man followed her into the restroom, went into a stall next to her, and used a cell phone camera to record her, also making lewd comments, said Lieutenant Dan Brislin with the San Diego Sheriff's Department. Store surveillance video identified 21-year-old Robert Becker as a suspect. He was arrested on Monday, August 22nd, at his home in the 4000 block of Alpine Boulevard in Alpine. He faces charges of attempted lewd and lascivious acts on a minor and annoying or molesting a child. Becker may have committed similar crimes in East County, sheriff's officials warn. They are asking victims to come forward. Robert Becker has brown hair, brown eyes, a beard, and a mustache. You can call 858-974-2417, or you can remain anonymous by calling Crime Stoppers at 888-580-8477 and be eligible for a reward of up to $1,000.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording at our Hideaway studio here in East County. Today, my very special guests are both from the Helix Water District. We have Mike Erhammer, who is the Senior Public Affairs Representative, and Mark Umphreys, the Director of Water Quality and Systems Operations. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you, Miriam.
So we've got a lot to talk about today, everything from water quality issues to water rates to some exciting new things coming up at Lake Jennings. Let's start, though, with a new state report that just came out, and it was all about raising some concerns about mercury levels involving 150 reservoirs around the state, including 10 here in San Diego County. One of those was Lake Jennings. It's in the Helix District. Now, to clarify, the way the state worded this originally, it was a little bit alarmist, and it kind of made it sound like the water was all polluted. That's not really the case, but it was actually the fish tissue that they had tested, and in some cases, certain species of fish tested high for the mercury. Mike and Mark, I'll let whichever one of you wants to jump in here go for it. You've done testing of the water quality at Lake Jennings. And how did that test out?
This is Mark. We test annually as a minimum, and oftentimes we'll test three or four times a year for various metals and contaminants, mercury included in that. Looking at data going back to the early 90s, there were 60 occasions where we looked for mercury, and with the exception of two cases, the levels were below the analytical detection levels. It essentially was zero. The two times where we detected it, they were quite low. They were below the safe level for drinking. So the mercury that we measure in the reservoir usually is not detectable. And if we happen to detect it two times out of 60, it's well below the safe levels for drinking water.
So it begs the question, a lot of listeners are probably wondering, how can you have high levels of mercury in fish when you have low levels of mercury in the lake?
It's a great question, and it's really confusing to a lot of people, but it turns out that we can have trace amounts of mercury. And by the way, mercury is in the atmosphere, it's in the soils, it's one of the most widely spread contaminants globally. It comes from natural sources, volcanoes, vaporization from soil and the ocean even exchanges back and forth in the environment. It's gone up in the past few decades with the proliferation of coal-fired power plants. In fact, a lot of the mercury we have in our atmosphere now comes from coal plants in China. The U.S. has done a good job of minimizing that. And we're starting to see some trends downward in the U.S. in mercury. But the mercury in the atmosphere deposits in our lakes and our rivers and creeks, and at levels that are so low we can't measure it. And yet any amount that's there through a biological process gets converted to a different form, an organic form. It's called methylmercury, and it's actually a worse pollutant than pure mercury, which is the mercury they have in amalgam and your fillings and other things.
So when a fish eats that, what happens?
So when a fish eats that, it stays in its tissue, in what they call bioaccumulates. So over 5-10 years, the levels in the tissue continue to build. So what you see, it's a very strong correlation between the size or age of the fish and the amount of methylmercury in the fish tissue.
Mm-hmm.
And it's worse in fish that feed on other fish. So some fish that don't feed on other fish don't have high levels. We see this in the ocean as well.
Yeah, they say that swordfish has such high levels.
Swordfish, shark,
eat it.
A number of other fish that are at the top of the food chain and live longer, have a longer age, tend to have higher levels.
So what are the fish that have the highest levels of mercury in the freshwater lakes? If you're a fisherman or fisherwoman out there listening, which ones should you be the most concerned about?
The one to be most concerned about, it's shown up in the state's testing that's part of the reason they created this program, are the bass. The bass are at the top of the food chain. They tend to get large and old. So, and you see it in the data that the measurements they make, the smaller bass, the levels aren't too bad. The problem if you're a fisherman is you don't really know whether your fish is large or small and whether it has levels of mercury. So the state's approach is to provide simple guidelines and basically advise people in two groups. If you're a pregnant or adolescent, that you should be eating less of fish. And certainly, and they tell you by the type of fish. If it's bass, they advise you not to eat it. If you're not a child or pregnant, you can eat maybe one serving a week and be okay. Trout, I think, is unlimited for most people. But the state posts these guidelines when you acquire your fishing permit. At our lakes, we publish these guidelines and provide them to the fishermen. Generally, the fishermen know as well, and similar type of information is available on marine fish as well. So, and as Miriam indicated, swordfish happens to be one of the worst.
Yeah, it was always one of my favorite.
Favorite fish, of course. Tuna is, we've all heard that over the years, not eat too much tuna. But it's the same type of issue.
Right. I think they typically say one can a week for children, maybe two for everybody else at the most. So, I talked with the representative from the state, and they said one of the things they're suggesting is the development of more sensitive testing that might be able to test the mercury down to lower levels. And then, you know, even if they find it, though, I guess the question is, what can be done? Is there a way to actually remove mercury from the water? The drinking water is safe now, as we want to reiterate that, as are most of the smaller fish to eat. But, you know, what if it gets worse eventually with the pollution, or we just want to make it safe to eat bass again? Do you think there eventually will be ways to do that?
Well, that's a great question again. And this program that the state's just started with, that generated some of the news articles about it, the state's trying to figure out if there are practical ways to reduce it. They have a list of a couple of things they think might help. Some lakes have tried them. They haven't been too successful. But in this program that they've just started, it may go on for the next 5 to 10 years, but they're going to select a number of reservoirs throughout the state under different types of different areas of the state, different types of reservoirs, and do some type of pilot test where they try different things, aerate it differently, or do something with the sediment. They have a list of things they'll try and to see if they can reduce the fish tissue levels of mercury. These types of studies will take years literally to complete to figure out if there's a way to control it. In the meantime, what we do see, like I said, we see trends, downward trends in the mercury in the atmosphere and other exposures. So that
and that's good. And that's really coming from the controls that are being put on factories to make them reduce the pollution at the point of pollution. At least in the United States, China and some of the other countries aren't really doing enough in that regard, as well as just in general trying to reduce the number of coal-fired power plants. It's really a problem with coal. Mercury isn't an issue with natural gas or nuclear or solar or wind or these other energy sources, but it is with coal, which, of course, is also a greenhouse gas emitter. Listeners, if you want those guidelines about the safe fish consumption and additional tips, you can go onto our site at eastcountymagazine.org. And if you click into our Green Living section, you'll find our articles on the mercury issues. And we have links there where you can get the full set of guidelines. Let's move on to another topic
that I know is of interest to a lot of listeners in the Helix District.
And that is the recent rate hikes that the board just passed through. Not real popular with some of the ratepayers, but what do they need to know about it? How big are the rate increases, and when do these actually take effect on the water bills?
Yeah, Helix Board passed our 2017 rates at their August 4th board meeting.
Right.
We're looking at, for the next year, at about a $6 a month increase for the average customer on their water bill. And I can break that down, actually, what that's paying for. Over 2 months, about $5.24 is going to the district's infrastructure repairs and replacement.
Yeah, you still have to repair the pipes.
We have to replace cast iron pipes that are 50 years and or older at this point. About $4.88 of that is going to water purchases. We're having an increase in the wholesale water rate from the San Diego County Water Authority in 2017. About $1.19 of that increase every 2 months is going to regulatory compliance fees that have gone up from the state of California. And just about 60 cents is going to our contribution to our partnership with Potter Dam Municipal Water District and their development of the East County Advanced Water Purification Program.
Yeah, the water districts locally have been in kind of a catch-22. It's real easy to criticize the water rate hikes, certainly, but it's harder to know how they could be avoided. The catch-22 is that as people are good citizens and are all trying to use less water, and Helix customers have certainly cut consumption, how much? Quite a bit.
Yeah. Helix water use is down about 21% over the last 12 months.
21%. But that means less water revenues coming in for the district, and you still have to fix the pipes and maintain everything. So the question, I guess, would be if somebody doesn't want the rate hikes, then you have to either find something in the budget to cut or another way to raise revenues. So that's kind of the dilemma that the district has been facing. So when will that take effect on the water bills?
2017 rates go into effect on water use beginning November 1st. And the San Diego County Water Authority's pass-through rate increase, the wholesale water rate increase, goes into effect on water use beginning January 1st.
Okay, very good. And I understand that's going to be a hot topic in the elections coming up for the board, so you can be watching for our interviews with candidates coming up soon, too. Moving on to another topic, some good news now. There's a lot of exciting things going on at Lake Jennings. Can you tell us about some of the new exciting things that have been added out there?
Go ahead.
So we actually have two really fun things going on. Just last weekend, we, for the first time, started renting out kayaks. The backstory on that is it took quite an effort working with the state health department to allow us to use the kayaks in the lake.
Yeah, I remember at first it was sort of a bring your own kayak, but not everybody has a kayak sitting around. So now you have them available for rent.
Now we have them available for rent. And cool. I think they were booked up last weekend. So it's really a beautiful lake for kayaking. Mm-hmm. And then Mike will talk about our other.
Yeah, in about just a few weeks from now, we're going to introduce teepees in our campground at Lake Jennings.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, you can rent a teepee for the weekend and have something to talk about at work on Monday morning.
Go live like the Indians used to live out in the plains, huh? Very, very interesting.
Yeah, we're excited about what's going on at Lake Jennings. We have a very good manager out of the park named Kira Haley. And we just learned, really, at the end of this fiscal year, when each department was doing its reporting, that we've actually come into the black at Lake Jennings, and that's exciting news.
The background on this, listeners, is that a couple of years ago, Helix took it back from the county that originally was controlling the lake, and when they first took it back, it was losing money. And, of course, in a district where you're trying to not raise the rates, losing money isn't a good idea. And so there were some people on the board who actually wanted to close the lake. And Joel Scalziti, said, no, wait, give me a committee and a year to figure out how to make this thing profitable. And he's made a lot of changes with the help of other people on that committee. And so it's great to hear that the lake is not going to be closing and it's now back in the black.
It's continued an upward trend in financially. So we're really excited about where it's headed, and hopefully can do more of these types of things in the future, make more investments in it and make it even nicer.
It is a beautiful lake out there for anyone that hasn't been. It's very accessible. It's in Lakeside, but really it's right off of Interstate 8. You go out just past El Cajon a little bit. So it really is one of the most accessible, large, beautiful reservoirs and lakes in the county.
Yeah, it's really turned out to be a easy destination for family camping.
Mm-hmm.
You know, basically being a 20-minute destination versus a 4-hour destination up to the Sierra. But it's a chance for busy families to still get that camping trip in, either in this summer or this fall.
Well, there you go. We'll try to recruit one of our interns maybe to go out and stay in a teepee and write a weekend getaway story about what that's like. That sounds fun.
Kayak a bit.
And kayak. There you go. Kayak and do some fishing. Small fish only. Now, you were also offering some classes coming up, I understand, for people that maybe want to learn how to save water, water-wise gardening and so forth. Can you tell us what that's about?
We're offering two landscape design workshops. This is our second or third series of these workshops. They've been very well attended by customers each time. Our next workshop is coming up September 17th, and we have another one after that on October 15th. These are morning workshops on a Saturday morning, about 4 hours with a professional landscape designer teaching the class.
Great.
Really well received. We already have, I think, about 60 people signed up for our September workshop. And the October one is beginning to fill. So I would encourage anybody listening, if you're interested in these workshops, to go to our website at hwd.com and look on our classes and events calendar. And you have to reserve your seat online, and it's easy to do.
Very good. And are there any rebates out there right now available for any of the water-saving equipment or for people who want to toss the turf and go to water-wise landscaping?
There are still rebates available, both for indoor efficiency, toilets and aerators and that kind of thing, but also for landscaping.
Mm-hmm.
One of the new programs for turf replacement, I think it may be the only kind of pot of money right now in terms of landscaping rebates, requires not only taking out the lawn and putting in water-efficient plants, but also doing some landscape improvements to prevent stormwater runoff.
Very good. How are we looking, by the way, in terms of the drought situation? We, of course, are coming off of 5 years of historic drought, and then we've had a little more rain this winter, but how is that looking?
Well, I don't think anybody quite knows. The last two articles I've read, there's a lot of uncertainty. No one's really willing to make a prediction just yet. I think after this El Nino, which was probably the largest ever recorded, failed to deliver the rain that people thought it would.
Yeah.
Even your meteorologists and scientists are leery of making predictions this time around.
We just don't know anymore. Well, I definitely want to thank you both for coming on the show. I'm going to give each of you the final word. Listeners, we've been speaking with Mark Umphreys and Mike Erhammer from the Helix Water District. What else would you like our listeners to know that I may not have asked you about today?
Well, I just want to say we really appreciate Miriam for this program and what she does with East County Magazine. And we appreciate our customers too and hope you take advantage of the information we put out on our website. You can sign up for Mike's email newsletter and stay current on what's happening with the district.
Yeah, and if I could add to that, that we were just recognized by the California Special Districts Association with a Certificate of Excellence as a transparent district.
Fantastic.
For providing our financial documents, our meeting documents, and everything online on our website.
There's a lot more information up there. Some of these agencies, it's like pulling teeth to find it, and you've got it all right there, so you're doing that right. I want to thank both of you for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you.
Thank you, Miriam.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This is Rebecca Williamson.
And this is Jonathan Getz, guest hosting Destination East County.
This week's Destination East County includes the Ramona Country Fair, a Tierra del Sol Star Party, a grand opening celebration at the La Mesa Wine Works, and live at the Lakes, a concert and barbecue at Lake Henshaw to help returning veterans and shelter dogs in Corvette Cruise Night in El Cajon.
Plus, we'll tell you about upcoming attractions, including a concert at Sequan Resort, the Julian Grape Stomp Festa, music festivals in Santee and Julian, Julian Apple Days, the La Mesa Oktoberfest, and the Barona Pow Wow.
So stay tuned for all these events and many more.
The Ramona Chamber of Commerce will present the 46th Annual Ramona Country Fair Thursday, August 25th to Sunday, August 28th at the Ramona Outdoor Community Center, 421 Aqua Lane, Ramona. This real old-fashioned country fair will feature amusement rides, a midway of carnival games, a Wild West show, a country music concert, prizes, food, a stage for live music and entertainment, crafts, shopping, and contests for crafters, and cooks vying for blue ribbons. The fair will also feature more than 100 vendors, including local businesses and home crafters, and a food court. A variety of crowd-pleasing hometown contests are planned, including pie-eating contest, best mustache contest, and awards for best jams, jellies, honey, salsa, jerky, and pickles. Proceeds from the fair will benefit the Ramona community, including scholarships to Ramona students. For more information, visit ramonachamber.com.
The San Diego Astronomy Association invites you to a star party at the organization's 10-acre site in the Tierra del Sol area of Boulevard on Saturday, August 27th from 7:30 to 10 p.m. The club's 22-inch telescope, along with other telescopes, are available for everyone to use. Members experienced in their use and in the night sky are available to answer questions from the many curious individuals, school groups, and civic organizations, and come to view the stars and planets, weather permitting. For more information, visit sdaa.org and click on the calendar section.
La Mesa Wine Works invites you to their grand opening celebration this Saturday, August 27th, including live music by the Barnyard Casanovas Band from 7 to 10 p.m. The La Mesa Wine Works is a co-op to showcase local wines. On Saturday, they will be serving up vintages from both San Pascual and Wyatt Oaks wineries, located at 8167 Center Street in La Mesa. In a revitalized industrial zone, Wineworks will also feature trivia nights and food trucks on Thursday nights starting September 17th, plus live music every Saturday night. For more information, you can visit lamesawineworks.com.
Ramona Ranch Winery, Roundup Grill, and John Little Catering are partnering to host Live at the Lake, an interactive outdoor music, barbecue, and wine fundraising event on the shores of Lake Henshaw in Santa Isabel on Sunday, August 28th from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. This event benefits Shelter to Soldier, a nonprofit organization that adopts and trains shelter dogs to serve as psychiatric service dogs for the post-9/11 combat veterans. Guests will enjoy live music by the Steel Horse Country Band, barbecue, beer, and craft wines. The event includes a tribute to all military veterans. This family-friendly event will honor service dogs of veterans on site. So hosts respectfully request that guests refrain from bringing family pets. Studies estimate that one in every five military personnel returning from Iraq and Afghanistan is suffering from PTSD. Every day, on average, 20 U.S. veterans and one active duty service member commit suicide. And every day, 3,200 dogs are being euthanized in the United States. The service Shelter to Soldier provides for free to veterans, and their commitment to adopt service dogs fulfill the mission of this nonprofit organization by saving lives two at a time. To learn more about the veteran support services provided by Shelter to Service, visit sheltertosoldier.org. For tickets, you can call Roundup Grill at 760-782-2729. Veterans are admitted free to the concert and can purchase food and drinks.
Corvette Cruise Night is coming to downtown El Cajon on Wednesday, August 31st from 5 to 8 p.m. In addition to watching these cool vets cruising Main Street, you can also enjoy some shimmying entertainment from Anna the Belly Dancer and friends. For details on this and other classic cruise nights, visit downtownelcajon.com.
Now for a preview of coming attractions.
The 46th annual Barona Powwow will take place September 2nd to the 4th at the Barona Sports Park, located on the Barona Reservation in Lakeside. Powwows aim to preserve Native American cultural traditions for future generations. Barona's powwow attracts tribal dancers and drummers from across the nation as they compete for prizes. You can also shop for Native American arts and crafts items at vendor booths and purchase food such as Indian fry bread. For more information, visit baronatribe.org/powwow.
On Friday, September 2nd, the Gregory Page Show comes to the Sikwan Golf Resort, Red Tail Grill Veranda in El Cajon from 6 to 9 p.m. This world-acclaimed singer-songwriter, recording artist, and international touring artist, crooner, and troubadour will share his original songbook as well as reimagined gems from the American roots jazz. For more information, you can visit sikwanresort.com.
You're invited to kick off your shoes and come enjoy a day of fun with the 20th annual Grape Stomp Festa at Mingini Winery in Julian. This fall favorite takes place on September 3rd from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. There will be tons of grapes to stomp, plus wine tasting from several local wineries, food available for purchase, vendor booths, Italian music, and bocce ball contests. For tickets and details, you can visit julianca.com.
Santee's annual Bluegrass Festival will be held Saturday, September 10th from 5:30 to 9:30 p.m. at Town Center Parkway Community Park East. This year's musical lineup features two talented bluegrass bands, the Homesick Hitcher and Mojave Soul. Admission entitles ticket holders to sample several varieties of wine, beer from numerous craft breweries, and food prepared by local restaurants. Proceeds from the one-night festival are used to fund recreation scholarship programs for seniors and low and moderate income families and provide annual operating funds for the Santee Teen Center. For tickets and details, visit SanteeBluegrassFestival.com.
Here's something to howl about. The Julian Music Festival on September 17th will benefit the California Wolf Center, which is working to preserve a rare and endangered wolf species. The music festival will be held on September 17th from 1 to 7 p.m. at the Mingini Winery in Julian. The 47th annual music festival will feature a diverse lineup of entertainment. For tickets and details, you can go to julianmusicfestival.com.
The annual Julian Apple Days Festival offers a weekend full of fun for the whole family on September 24th and 25th. It's part of the longer Apple Days celebration. The two-day festival will be held at Mangini Winery, featuring apple displays, music and dancing, an antique tractor display, children's games and activities, gold panning demonstrations, a beer and wine garden, food and merchandise vendors, contest, and of course, apple pie. For more information, visit julianca.com.
You're invited to the largest Oktoberfest celebration west of the Mississippi. La Mesa Oktoberfest, September 30th to October 2nd. This community event is spread out over nearly six blocks in La Mesa Village and features hundreds of exhibitors, family-friendly activities, German food, music, dancing, outfits, games, and of course, beer. For more information, visit the LaMesaOktoberfest.com.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the mountains to the sea.
San Diegans living with Alzheimer's can now receive free GPS devices under the Wandering Prevention Pilot Program started by Alzheimer's San Diego. The program, which was funded by a $10,000 county grant, will allow Alzheimer's San Diego to give 100 families a free Great Call GPS device. Alzheimer's disease can cause someone, even in the early stages, to become confused or disoriented, and this can pose serious safety issues. Today, there are more than 62,000 San Diegans living with Alzheimer's or another form of dementia, and 6 in 10 of them will wander at some point. Unfortunately, many families are unaware of the risks of wandering and do not have a plan in place. Each family in the program will receive a free Great Call device, accessories, and 3 months of service. They will also receive continuing support and follow-up from the master's-level social workers at Alzheimer's San Diego. Supervisor Greg Cox, who proposed funding for the project, says, "This program is going to save lives and give families tremendous peace of mind. We are making the devices available to families who otherwise couldn't afford them. This local project is supported by the San Diego County Sheriff's Department, which is seeing an increasing number of cases involving wandering patients with dementia. The Wandering Pilot Program will work with the Sheriff's Take Me Home Program, which allows family members to register photos of Alzheimer's and other dementia patients so that law enforcement will have access to critical information to help return the person safely. For more information about the Wandering Prevention Pilot Program or dementia-related safety concerns, you can visit alzd.org or call 858-492-4400. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Kim Cooney.
This is Liz Albert with an SDSU golf report. Former San Diego State men's golf standout J.J. Spahn emerged victorious at the Web.com Tour's New Sentinel Open presented by Pilot on Sunday after shooting a 5-under par 66 during the final round at Flotsam Country Club in Knoxville, Tennessee. Spahn drained a 12-foot birdie putt on the par 5 18th hole to seal his first ever win on the Web.com Tour, edging Sam Ryder by one stroke. Ryder had a chance to force a playoff, but misfired on his own birdie attempt within 10 feet on the final hole shortly thereafter. With his finish, Spahn established the tournament record with a collective 26 under par 258, breaking the previous standard of 23 under set by Tim Connolly in 1993 and equaled by Heath Slocum in 2001. In addition, Spahn collected a winning paycheck of $99,000 to climb from 5th to 3rd on the money list this year with over $335,000. Prior to Sunday's breakthrough win, Spawn lost the playoff to Ollie Snyderjans in June at the Arrow Capital Classic in Wichita, Kansas, before falling short by 2 starts last month at the Utah Championships presented by Zions Bank in Leti, Utah. Despite the near misses, Spawn has already secured his PGA Tour card as a top 25 finisher. Spawn, who twice received All-America recognition by both the Golf Coaches Association of America and Golf Week, won 5 tournaments during his collegiate career at San Diego State, which is tied for the most in school history with Aztec Hall of Famer Lenny Clements. A native of Los Angeles, Spawn also earned Mountain West Player of the Year honors as a senior in 2012 and collected 3 consecutive All-Conference certificates. He ended that season ranked 17th by GolfStat.com and 21st nationally by Golf Week after leading SDSU to its best ever Division I team finish with a 5th place tie in the match play phase of the NCAA championships.
This is Miriam Raftery with a public service announcement. The Mexican Consul General will be holding a mobile consulate at the Lemon Grove Library on Saturday, August 27th from 8 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. Mexican people living in the United States can set an appointment for assistance with passports and consular identifications. The consul's office also issues birth certificates and gives advice on other issues such as health, immigration, and financial education. To make an appointment, you can call 1-877-639-4835. And for more information, you can visit consulmexsd.org.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the mountains to the sea.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Jonathan Getz with the Green Scene Report. What if glass skyscrapers and even ordinary-looking glass windows in your home could be transformed into solar energy production centers? There are an estimated 5 million skyscrapers and tall towers in the U.S., which consume a whopping 40% of America's electrical power. That's about 430 million square feet of windows. Now, Solar Window Technologies has developed an invisible system to transport electricity through solar electric generating. Solar Window says the system could pay for itself in just 1 year on a typical 50-story building. The company claims its solar window can outperform rooftop solar 50 to 1. Here's how it works. The solar window generates electricity when transparent organic coatings are applied in thin layers onto glass surfaces. A system of invisible wires half the width of a human hair transport electricity across the surface to the edge of the glass where it connects to the building's electrical systems. The prospect of a transparent electricity-generating window that utilizes this virtually invisible system for transporting is especially attractive to architects, designers, and building occupants in tall towers and skyscrapers. Solar window coatings can be applied to clear glass without obscuring views and are also available in colored tints. Unlike conventional systems, solar window can be applied to all 4 sides of tall towers, generating electricity using natural and artificial light conditions and even shaded areas. Though not yet on the market, the company says it's gearing up for rapid production to meet demand. Don't have a skyscraper? Here's a bright idea. The company also has residential solar windows, including French paint styles that can turn any homeowner into an electric power producer. To learn more about this promising new solar option, visit www.solarwindow.com.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Liz Alper, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Kevin McLeod, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.